Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Welcome to Bollywood is for Lovers. I'm Erin Fraser.
And I'm Matt Bowes. In this episode, we're joined by musician and playback singer Sasha Tirupati, who will be performing later this month at Bollywood Monster Mashup, Canada's largest South Asian festival, happening July 21st and 22nd in Mississauga. Sasha will also be appearing alongside performers Ash King and Aishwarya Pandit during an IG meet and greet with Bollywood Monster Mashup on July 9th at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Before we begin, we would like to respectfully acknowledge that we record this podcast on Treaty 6 territory, home to First Nations and Métis people.
Welcome, Sasha Tirupati, to Bollywood is for Lovers. Thank you for coming on today, and it's going to be really interesting to hear from a playback artist as to how that aspect of the biz works. It's interesting because a lot of our fans and listeners, they're huge fans of like the big ballads. Mm-hmm. But since we don't actually speak Hindi, we're more of the dance tracks people, because like the poetry of the words doesn't always come through in the translation and the subtitles at the bottom. So mm-hmm. Question one, I was wondering, like, which is your favorite kind of song to do, like a big love ballad, or maybe like a fun, I don't know, running around in the village type thing, or maybe like a dance track? Like, well, what's your actual preferred style?
It's actually a great question. I think it's so subjective. A lot of times, like, my heart is, I'm a hardcore romantic, so my heart is with, you know, melody, but certain times there's that beautiful and that perfect amalgamation of melody with a dance track. I think like if you listen to, and this is not Bollywood, but if you listen to the Skrillex and Diplo, and this is just so you can relate to what I'm trying to say here, if you listen to the Skrillex Diplo Bieber track Where Are You Now, you know, where are you now that I need ya, when you listen to that, there's just such a beautiful mix of melody, plus it's got that trap, you know, production on it. You can dance to it, but at the same time, there's just so much soul to it. So, you know, in Bollywood as well, there's just such a wide plethora of content that's being generated. Obviously, there's the run-of-the-mill stuff, but then on the other side, there are composers and record labels who kind of work together to create things that are not, you know, as typical as Bollywood would probably be identified as, and that kind of music really catches my attention. So, you know, there's obviously you're aware of A.R. Rahman, sir, who I've had the honor of working with, but besides him, I've also worked with Amit Trivedi, and Amit is one of those composers. Rahman, sir, is one of those composers who will do that beautiful balance between something that has not been heard and doing something that they would like to do, and kind of bringing everything together in what the audiences want. Mm-hmm. And that is where that perfect amalgamation comes through. And that's where listeners like myself kind of dig that sort of Bollywood music for sure. And then of course there are dance tracks that I love that are, you know, super commercial, but yeah. It's about where my heart is.
Those are fun. Those are the ones I'll listen to on the bus usually, that kind of thing. Or like, there's so many different kinds of songs that you get. Like, I'm thinking like in Mom, which you worked on, right? Wasn't there like a track where Sridevi is kind of exploring and like getting clues and stuff? Like, how do you try and get like the idea of solving a mystery into singing a song? Like that love song, sure, dance song, sure, but like a narrative song. Those are some of my favorites as well.
I think it's also to set the stage for what's going to happen next, you know? Foreshadowing per se. So I think a lot of times the songs, the way they're incorporated into a scenario, it's to give a sense of what's to be expected. Also, besides that, I feel us as Indians, or myself being of Indian origin, I think we are more on the emotional side. So I feel the best way for people to, I'm not saying you guys aren't emotional. I'm just saying we're very, you know, that's why there's a song for every emotion here. And that's why every movie has, you know, multiple songs for multiple emotions. It's just how we kind of we're wired genetically. So I feel to kind of, and I feel film directors and producers kind of, you know, really know how to tap into that. And so a lot of times that's probably the reason why we have songs in our movies, because what is a better way of establishing an emotion than music, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I feel, in a, coming back to your question, when they have a Sri Devi film and, you know, they've got a song for the situation you're describing, I can see how, like, I can wrap my head around that, and I can see why it's there. I'm not saying it's always the most intelligent thing to do. I'm not saying it's always the most obvious thing to do, for sure. But I guess like I said, I think it's more to tap into the sentimentality of Indian sentiments and Indian emotion to kind of get a point across.
And like the character, what she's feeling at that moment is, she just met Nawaz that day, and they're trying to figure out this thing. So yeah, like just putting yourself into the character. So like, because as far as I understand it, you're often doing the songs before the movie's finished. Like, how much of a sense of the film story do you get when you're working on these a lot of the time?
Different composers work very differently. Most composers, though, they'll not tell you anything. They'll call you at 2 a.m, 3 a.m, maybe 3 p.m, whatever, depending on when they work. They'll just tell you that, hey, so there's a song, and this is the kind of mood that we want, or, you know, can you sing it like this, or can you sing it like that? And they start recording. So, That's cool. 90% of the times, we don't know who we're singing for. We don't know what the project is. But then there are also composers who will give you a very detailed idea of what you're kind of contributing to, probably because they come from a different school of thought. Maybe to them it's about if the singer, or if the person who's carrying the song in their voice, if they are informed and if they're aware of what the premise of what they're singing is, then they will probably be able to, I don't know, emote better, or they'll be able to perform the song better. It's come to a point where I'm on autopilot now. if they tell me, great. If they don't tell me, greater.
Well, they're gonna know, like, your voice will be good for this particular project, and you can hit the emotions that they're looking for, regardless of like knowing the plot of the movie.
Well, I'd like to believe that's how they feel. Thank you.
So you grew up in BC. So what was your experience with Hindi cinema, Indian movies? Like, what was that like growing up?
I feel like I come from an era, or I was born into an era where I had the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. I got to listen to a lot of great music on audio cassettes. I got to listen to a lot of great music on physical CDs. I got to listen to the radio, I got to sing on the radio, and then obviously when everything kind of digitalized, I got that, and I'm kind of, that's what I'm feeding off of today. But I feel it was just great to be born into a household where both my parents were so excruciatingly, if I may, passionate about music. It's so funny because now when I sing, my father would hear like an off note, and he'd be like, and oh my god, and he would disintegrate my songs. He'd be like, you were strained there, I can hear that strain. Oh, I hear the pitching's a little off, and he will just decimate me. So I mean, I think that's how, and it's very I feel they're blessed that way, because both in both of their families, music was like, it was taboo, it was banned. My father would get, like, my grandfather would take a slipper and you know, aim for my father if he'd ever hear my father humming a note. Wow. So yeah, I think, and I think a lot of times, I don't know if that's how it is in the West, even though I did grow up in the West, but just culturally, I don't know if it is that, you know, parents live vicariously through their children. So I don't know if that kind of applied. It does apply a lot in South Asian families. And so I feel my parents kind of did that with me, particularly my father. He loves music. He drank music, he slept music, he just like his world revolved around music. And when I started learning classical music, he would know more of the ragas than I would eventually. So I think part of the passion with which they kind of pursued music with me, if I may, I think part of it came from the fact that they were so deprived of that when they were growing up, and they were trying to live a musical life in its entirety through their child, through their eldest child, being me.
You definitely see movies where like the dad wanted to be a poet or something, and his son is trying to become a poet. So there's like a friction there of like, well, I could have done that, you know, but I had to go to work. So yeah, that kind of wanting to live vicariously through your children, that makes a lot of sense. But what made you pick the decision to make this your career? Like, you come from a household where people are music fans, enjoying it, but what made you take that big step into becoming a professional?
Okay, there was one incident particularly, or one song that kind of was the catalyst, but at the same time, it was just so many years of so passionately pursuing something beyond other things that I was passionate about. So I was a swimmer, I was studying towards becoming a neurosurgeon. I wanted to be a journalist at one point, so I started studying mass media. Then I was an academic in so many ways. I mean, wow. I won the Governor General's medallion for scoring the highest in BC, I guess. Nice. So I got multiple scholarships into university. So the thing is, I mean, that is something I did want to study. I did want to become, like I said, a neurosurgeon at one point. And there were like 100 other things that I wanted to do. And the ADHD helped, because, I mean, we can't, you know, we cannot concentrate on one thing, and one thing is never enough. But then there was this
Erin is nodding sagely. You can't see her, but she's like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm familiar with this sensation.
Thank you. So for me, I started writing, or actually releasing music that I've written in 2019, which is not too far ago, not too long ago, but I was writing my own music since I was 12. And a lot of the things that I would write about would be the things that I'm not able to talk to people about, or a lot of things that I would write about would be things that I did want to talk about, but I had such a hard time expressing because the words never came out right when I spoke in that moment. But then the moment I had I had the opportunity to actually sit down and organize my thoughts on paper, they would just make so much more sense. Mm. But I think that's one of the things which kind of gave me a very soft corner for independent music, as well as the desire to continue pursuing it. So I'll talk about that later.
You come from writing your own songs at 12 years old to working with Ara Rahman. Like, how does that happen?
So they're mutually exclusive. They actually don't have anything to do with them with each other. But with Rahman, sir, what happened is that, sorry, the previous question you were asking me, that links to the next question, which is so basically I did drop out of my higher education because there was an A.R. Rahman track that I heard, and that was from the movie Guru, and the song is called Tere Bina Besuadi. So it started with a dum da da dum da da maste maste dum da 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 dum da da maste da 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 dum da. That song, it changed my life. It created some sort of a chemical reaction, and a chemical reaction, as you know, is irreversible. So at that point, I was just like, okay, this is what I want to do. That was the making or breaking point for me, and or the tipping point for me. And I kind of locked myself up in my bedroom and I told my parents that screw the scholarships, I'm gonna go and sing for this guy. And I wanted to sing for the movies at that point. And I just, everything kind of happened after this song. I actually took a flight to Toronto because I heard that they were having the premiere for the movie, and I spent quite a bit of money to actually get there because I just found out and there were no flights available. And apparently I'd missed A.R. Rahman, sir, by minutes when I got there. And I mean, who was to think that 12 years later I was going to be in his studio recording for him? But that was the point where I dropped out. I kind of in a way running away from home because my parents were not happy. Obviously, again, another part of the South Asian culture is, you know, your son and daughter have to be doctors and engineers and, you know, whatnot. Yeah. So their daughter wanting to become a singer, not a stable job, not a stable career. You know, you're not going to be making stable money, all of those concerns. And I can completely understand where it comes from, you know, from the parents' point of view. So they weren't very happy. But then, yes, when I won the national award is when my father texted me for the first time saying, I'm speechless. So I feel for me, that was those two words from my father were like a Grammy. When you know, I had won the national award, I felt that was a bigger award than, you know, the national award for me. But
that's straight out of a movie. That's crazy.
I know, right? And Bollywood is for lovers.
Yeah.
So with Rehman Sir, what happened is that after I took that step of coming to India, to Mumbai particularly, I started doing a lot of ad films, jingles, all that jazz, just the things that would get kind of pay the bills. And at the time, ad films actually paid a lot of money. So I was on the road for 3 nights. I didn't have a house, didn't know anybody. I was on a reality show prior to. So basically I made it into the top 12, got eliminated, didn't have a place after that. While I was on the reality show, they did provide accommodation, but it was after I got out of there that I had nothing. So finally found a place, did my first show and ended up paying for my first month of rent and the deposit and the brokerage and everything. Did my first jingle and ended up getting money to actually eat. Before that, I'd walk 7-8 kilometers a day just to save 3 rupees. You could do the math, 3 Indian rupees on, you know, a meal. So it was tough times, but I wouldn't change a thing about that. I actually lived 2.5 hours away by train from Mumbai, and I would commute every day because rent was cheaper there. So all of this into, you know, getting your first ad film, into getting your first gig, into getting, you know, your first playback, which is a complete flop, and into your next 17 film songs that are all utter flops. So nothing was happening, basically, except for that, you know, that my bills were getting paid because of the ad work I was doing. And then it was Rehman Sir that happened after those 17 flop films. I was told by a friend who I had actually done a jingle for that Rehman Sir was auditioning for Coke Studio. And I was, long story short, again, there's just so many particulars, but I hate doing this. I showed up for the auditions and I had a sore throat. So I was like, oh, I totally screwed this. I did such a terrible job at that audition. And it's so funny. I got selected. So I was like, I should always keep a bad throat. So anyways, I reached the rehearsals after my selection. And during rehearsals, there were 7 girls who were selected out of, I think, 35, 40 girls who had auditioned. And randomly in between the rehearsals, Rehman Sir just looked towards us, this little group of 7 girls. And he's like, which one of you is Sasha? And I thought, okay, you blew it. He heard the rehearsal audio again. Sorry, the audition audio again. And he's like, oh shit, she's a mistake. And now he's asking who's Sasha so he could pick me out and be like, get out of here. you were an accident. So I didn't raise my hand. I'm just like, I'm literally hiding behind the other girls, you know, do not point towards me. Do not tell him who Sasha is. And one of the girls just like, you know, big mouth. She's saying, sir, she's like right here. So I just raised my pinky and I was like, it's me. And that's it. Like he's so quiet. He doesn't react. And that was bothering me. I went home that night. He didn't say a word, Rehman Sir. I got home and I puked. I could not sleep all night. I passed out in the washroom because I was like, this is that one opportunity I had to work with the person I left everything for, my scholarships, my education, everything. And he's going to kick me out today. So I don't know when I woke up. I do realize I woke up in the bathroom, got up. I had a very bad stomach ache. I reached the shoot location, which was, and I think we had the shoot the next day. And I think that was the day, D-Day, when he was going to kick me out. So I just reached the shoot location, got ready, got on the sets. Everybody was there. Rehman Sir was there. And there was just one window I had where he just crossed by me for his makeup touch-up. And I was like, it's now or never. I got up during the shoot when there was a cut. And I just excused myself. I asked him, sir, very sorry to bother you. Real quick question. Why did you ask who Sasha was yesterday? I was like, I cannot sleep. I could not sleep after he said that. Is it something I f***ed up at? I said, I'll work my ass off, but I'm going to, you know, I'm going to fix this. He started laughing. He's like, no, my assistants played me your voice and I felt your voice sounded like an instrument. And that led to another hurricane of thoughts, which was that, okay, so I'm replaceable. What if he calls that instrumentalist and that instrument to like replace me, and then, you know, he doesn't need me after that, and then I never end up singing for him because, you know, it's the instrumentalist who's gonna play. So that led to that. And then I think a month afterwards, he didn't fire me, a month afterwards, it was around 3-4 in the morning, I was sick again, and middle of the night, I got a call at around 3:30, and I was croaking, and I picked up the call just thinking it's going to be a call for a recording, and I'm not going to be able to make it. I picked up, and some girl on the phone at the time, she's like, hi, I'm calling from E.R. Rahman's office. This is Srinidhi, and Rahman, sir, would like to try your voice for some songs, so can you fly down to Chennai right now? I was like, what? So that was basically where my life changed. That was that was not a long story short, guys. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine.
It's a great story.
I'm just wondering why everyone calls you at 3 a.m. Why, is it just the artistic temperament of like, oh, I have to compose my songs at night? And oh, I just thought of her, like, is that how the creative process goes with him?
So the thing is, I think a lot of us are just, you know, perpetual nocturnal animals. Rahman sir being one, myself being one. I used to study at night, practice at night. Even when I was a kid, I used to do that, actually. It's funny. But then there are other composers who actually prefer recording in the mornings, and that doesn't sit well with me. but I mean, I obviously, if I have to, I'll go and record in the morning. But yeah, I think it's different for different composers. For somebody like I can speak on my behalf. I feel just at night you're at peace. I prefer the dark. I like it when I'm not seen. I like it when, you know, there's not too much of a, which is kind of ironic because, you know, we're on stage and the spotlight's on us. But yeah. I think it's that contrast that, you know, kind of makes us feel more secure when we're in the dark and when we're, you know, just in that silence of the night. And, you know, you could think, there's more clarity, not visual clarity, but clarity in the mind, artistic clarity, I guess. And I think maybe Rahman sir feels that way as well. And it's just more silent. Maybe also, you know, being in India. Well, I mean, I was like this in Canada as well. But in India, there's just so much noise everywhere that I think finally at night, you don't hear horns honking. You don't hear, you know, dogs and cats and buffaloes and all of that. I think, not that there's buffaloes everywhere, but I'm just saying. But I think just that peace you find in the nights. I think that kind of allows you to put everything else aside, and actually music's like meditation, so I think that kind of helps bringing you into that meditative state, if that makes sense at all.
Yeah, I assume it's also cooler in the evening.
Yeah, it's not so hot out, so that makes sense too.
Yeah, that's true actually.
Yeah, so speaking about working with you know, these auteur composer types, how do you adapt to singing in different languages in different film industries? Is there different codes of conduct for the different industries, or is it all sort of the same gig?
It's different, actually. It's different, yet it's not. But yeah, it is different. The cultures are very different. The attitude is very different. I've noticed, not that they're not humble in Bollywood, but I've just noticed that, you know, the moment you hit the South, people are just more like, they're very physically humble. So, you know, they're very slouched. You know, they're very, it's as if they're surrendering themselves to you. And these can be the biggest artists who have the same, you know, level of humility that, you know, a budding or an emerging artist would have. And so, or you would expect them to have. So there's just and they're very grounded, and they talk to you, you know, very, the tone is different. And so the working environment becomes very different, you know. They kind of expect that humility from you as well. And you, versus over here, I think it's more about, you know, the confidence and, you know, being carrying that confidence where you go. I think that's a, if there was one way I could, I were to distinguish between just the environment of, you know, working in different industries. And if I were to divide it into the northern industry and the southern industry, this is how it would be. But in terms of the process, I think obviously with different vernaculars, I'm an autodidact for the most of it, but for languages that I don't, I've picked up on quite a bit of the 13, 14 languages I sing in, but I'm not fluent in them, but I would like to consider myself to be a very good listener, though you would not agree with me right now because we're in an interview, but I am. And I think when they explain pronunciations for, you know, the lyrics of a song, I try my best to be as attentive to the nuances of what they're trying to tell me, just so that I have my diction right when I'm singing or performing the song behind the microphone. So I feel anybody, if you're a good listener, you can definitely sing in any language you want, just to be able to listen and replicate what you're listening to.
That's fascinating. Like, yeah. It seems like such a disconnect for me to not actually speak the language, but to just pick it up on it, like phonetically. That's amazing, actually.
And to interpret it with emotion.
Yeah, like to actually make it sound like you're the character going through this thing that, like, without speaking it, that's just, yeah, that's astounding to me.
Well, I think if you've gone through the amount of heartbreak I've gone through, I think you would do a better job at it, trust me.
Did you tell A.R. Rahman that you were like seconds away from meeting him in Toronto?
I think I did, yes. I think the first time I met him, I told him that. So I think to the extent that I told him, I spent $500 or something, $100. I don't know, sorry, $500 or $1,000 from, I don't even remember now, but I told him like a particular figure, basically, that, you know, I spent this much money just to come and see you and I missed you by like a couple of seconds. He's like, don't worry, I'll write you a check for double the amount.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Like $500,000, that'd be a lot in rupees as well. So you were talking a little bit about your own work, but is there a different process for you when you're working on a song that you've made yourself rather than one you're doing for a movie or an ad or something? Like, you were talking about how it kind of helps center you and you can kind of have a meditative state to it, but like, what's it like doing your own stuff?
So they're definitely, they're like night and day. For starters, when you're singing for somebody else, like a composer, more often than not, they're pretty much set with, the key of the song. And, you know, a lot of the instruments are already dubbed. A lot of times the male singer's already tracked on the song. So you're stuck in a particular key, which could or could not be in your comfort range. So for starters, when I'm writing my own songs, I choose the key I want to sing in. So it could be, and it's funny because a lot of the songs that I've sung for various film industries, most of them are beyond my range. So I am literally struggling with a sore throat for the next 1 week after singing, you know, almost any song I've sung for the films, because they're so high. And I end up screeching in the studio and I could get the job done. Yes. But then after that, I'm battling that, you know, that abuse that I put that I subject my voice to, in the recording studio. So that's one advantage of doing your own music, which is, you know, you could sing in a comfortable key. And I think that is one thing that makes it more. So coming to the next point, it just makes it more organic. When you're singing in a studio for a composer, when you're singing in a key that is not entirely comfortable for you, you're unable to concentrate on the emotion of the song and your concentration is more on being able to hit those notes. Mm-hmm. When you're doing your own stuff though, you're not constant. You don't have to worry about the key of the song. So where is your attention then? Your attention, says the girl with ADD, your attention is basically on emoting and on meaning the words and feeling what you're saying and telling people that, hey, this is how I'm feeling at this point about the song or about these words or about what I'm trying to express here. So I think that is the primary difference between, at least for me, when I'm singing, you know, a song for a commissioned job versus when I'm singing something which is independently written. But other than that, obviously the third and I think an umbrella statement here would be the fact that when it's independent, and by independent I mean you've written the melody, you've written the lyrics, you're singing all of that kind of all together compressed into one, then it's your baby.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You clothe it the way you want to clothe it. You know, send it to whatever school you want to send it to. You feed it whatever you want to feed it. It's your baby. You can do whatever you want with it. So then it's entirely your work of art and your creation versus you seeing a melody that's been composed by somebody else, lyrics that have been written by somebody else, you know, a scale that has already been set by the composer or the music producer or whoever, that's been done by somebody else. So basically you're like, you know, you're like a surrogate. So mm-hmm. I feel, or you're like a stepmom actually, in that situation. So I feel that is the primary difference I feel when it comes to, but again, I mean, you still have an attachment because the component, you still have a component of yourself as a part of that song and as a significant part of that song, because you're carrying those lyrics and that melody in your voice. Yeah. So you obviously have an attachment and you have an emotion towards, but then that becomes, it's just a limited emotion versus an emotion where you can go wild with everything. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You're not being asked to hit Lata Mangeshkar high notes or something. So you can focus on your own,
right? Your own totally. That's actually a really good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, yes. Comparing it to surrogacy, Mimi was the perfect project for you.
I know.
Yeah.
Wow. I like how you're so aware. I mean, you guys have really studied me. If I may.
We watched a lot of movies that you worked on.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But mostly in the Hindi sphere.
Yeah. Last question. Is there anyone in any industry really that you'd love to work with that you haven't been attached to? Or is there like a dream project that you'd love to work on?
Oh my God, there's so many. I mean, I to begin with, I feel so blessed and I feel extremely, extremely privileged that I've had, you know, the honor and the opportunity of working with some of the biggest composers in the country and internationally, you know, Rahman Sir being one of them. He's won, I don't know, multiple Grammys and an Oscar and whatnot. So having worked with him, then there's his, the person who Rahman Sir used to work with, which was Ilya Raja Sir. So I've sung for him. Then there's Mithun, there's Amit Trivedi, there's Shankar Ehsaan Loy. Shankar Sir just got his honorary doctorate from, I don't know, from London. I forgot which institute, but it's been insane to be working with all of these people who, you know, I used to listen to on my little MP3 player. But then, you know, there's so many more. It's, I remember telling my mother that, you know, I'm just going to go there. I'm going to get one hit song and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to finish my medical, you know, studies. It's a never ending hunger and never ending thirst. You get that one song and then you want to do another song and then you want to do 10 more songs. And then next thing you know it, you're 3,000 songs old. So that is how it is when it comes to wanting to work with people as well. You know, I wanted to do one song with Rahman Sir and then I ended up doing like 40 songs with him. Similarly, when it comes to composers, Ajay Atul are composers I actually did record a song with them, but the song hasn't released, or I don't know if the movie's been shelved or, you know, what eventually happened to that. But Ajay Atul are, you know, a duo that I would, oh my God, that I'm still, Sanjay Leela Bhansali is another one who I am dying to work with, yeah. And again, growing up listening to him with Devdas and of course Shreya Ghoshal, and she's like my virtual guru. And then there is Vishal Shekhar, who I really want to work with. They've been very kind with putting my work out and just, you know, sharing and talking about things I've been doing, but I want to work with them as well for the film industry. But if there is an international artist that I would really like to work with, that would be Bon Iver. I actually flew to Glasgow to watch them live last year in October, November, something like that. So they are artists that, and of course, Justin Vernon from Bon Iver. I don't know what I would, you know, do to work with them. They're incredible. And I just feel their soul. I connect with their soul. So yeah, these are the artists that I want to work with. But yeah, Bollywood, you kind of know who I want to work with now.
Yeah. And I suppose it never gets old seeing your song picturized too, right? Like when you go watch the movie, like, do you get to know about like a preview screening or like, how does that work? Now I'm just curious, like at what point do you actually see the whole picture?
This is actually, it's an interesting question because sometimes we are called to our screenings and the premieres. Sometimes we're not. A lot of times though, more often than not, we actually find out that our song is in the film once the song comes out. Mm. So when Hamma came out, I didn't even know that my song was in the movie. I randomly saw a notification from the YouTube channel on which the song was uploaded, and I saw my name there. And then I was like, oh, I have sung on this song.
Yeah, we just watched that one like 5 minutes ago before talking to you. Like, yeah. Oh, that was a fun scene. And if you had any idea that this could happen, that's going to be a little weird. Like, oh, it's like a bedroom scene. Interesting.
Yeah.
I also just want to quickly plug that you have a beautiful interpretation of Bon Iver's Perth.
Oh my God, thank you.
I was listening to yesterday. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, my
so
God,
it would be amazing to hear you collaborate with him, I think.
Yeah, it'd be a real meeting in mind.
That made my week.
So last up here, what can the audience expect when you're at Bollywood Monster Mashup this July?
A lot of masala.
Ooh, yeah.
Yep. A lot of that Indian Bollywood spice is what they can expect.
Yeah. It's going to be like kind of party jams, do you think? Is it going to be like a huge dance floor or some breaks for some ballads? Or do you have a set list?
Yeah, I actually do. There is going to be a lot of, we've got an amalgamation of a lot of Bollywood electronic dance music and then the typical Punjabi dance music from Bollywood, and then of course we've got some of the we've got a little bit for everybody. Like there's something in it for everybody. We've got some old numbers, Asha Ji, Lata Ji, revamped, and I think there's just a lot of different a lot of variety that we're going to, and of course I'm going to be covering some of my own songs as well. So those are ballads mostly. You can definitely expect a bit of Hamma. You can definitely expect a bit of Asha Ji. You can definitely expect a bit of Vishal Shekhar and Rehman Sir and Pritam and Jazzy B. Everybody's there. There you go.
Yeah.
It's going to be a party.
Any of that Asha disco stuff in the 70s. That's some of my faves. So.
Oh yeah, that's definitely there. I'm happy.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So good talking to both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Sasha. And you know, thanks for coming on, and have a good time in the GTA.
And thank you very much. I'll be back.
Yeah. Thanks again.
Thank you.
ये मौसम की बारिश ये बारिश का पानी.
Yo guys, my name's Ash King and I'm coming live for the Bollywood Monster Mashup.
Ash King, singer of Barish.
ये मौसम की बारिश ये बारिश.
Shasha Tirupati, singer of the Hamma song. Ashwarya Pandit, singer of Bate Bate. July 21 and 22, Mississauga Celebration Square. At the largest South Asian festival in Canada, Bollywood Monster Mashup. Free concerts presented by TD. Food, shopping. July 21 and 22. For prizes, enter lovers at bollywoodmonstermashup.com.
So thanks so much to Sasha Tirupati for speaking with us. We've got some events coming up for Bollywood Monster Mashup.
Yeah, so the main festival will be July 21st and 22nd in Mississauga. But if you're not in the greater Toronto area, you can still catch Sasha and Bollywood Monster Mashup at their IG, their Instagram meet and greet on July 9th at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And that's, you know, it's on Instagram so everyone in the world can show up and hang out.
Yeah, that's 9:30 IST if you're in India and you want to check it out.
Mm-hmm. So that brings us to the end of this episode. We will be back in a couple weeks, and what's it going to be, Matt? We already have this one recorded. This is exciting.
Yes,
we're ahead of things.
We don't usually do this, but we're ahead of schedule. We are doing pilot season again.
Yeah.
So as you may have noticed, there hasn't been any good movies all year, apart from Pathaan.
Yeah, not since Pathaan. And Bola. We kind of
we like Bola. Yeah, we'll talk about Bola
yeah.
in our mid-year. But yeah, we decided to watch the first episode of six different new Hindi shows. Mm-hmm. And we will pick one to watch.
Yeah, we're going to pick one to review. In the meantime, Matt, how can people keep up with the show?
At Bollywood Pod on Twitter. I'm at Matt_BOWES.
I'm at Erin E. Fraser, ErinEFraser. If you're a fan of the show, please leave us a star rating and review on your podcatcher of choice. If that review was not on Apple Podcasts, then just shoot us a message so we make sure to see it. You can also listen to my other show that I do with Paul Matwichuk. We just recorded an episode on Cormac McCarthy films, so All the Pretty Horses and The Counselor.
Your favorite movie.
You made me rewatch The Counselor.
I liked it.
So that'll be out soon. And we want to thank Becca Dahlke for our artwork. We love our good boy, Tuffy.